All right. Hello, everybody. Gavin Eubank here. I'm alongside Austin David. We are in the Minnesota United booth at Orlando City Stadium.
Fitting.
It's fitting because the Lions, or not the Lions, the Loons came out on top in this one. 2-1 Saturday night here. Not a full crowd on hand, which is kind of disappointing for the second game.
I mean, it was only 1,000 people less.
1,000 people left, but, you know, you would expect. So there's nothing else going on in town.
A little bit less. I don't know. I mean, it's on paper, Minnesota is not a good team. Last year, they weren't a good team. And on paper, last year, Orlando wasn't a good team. I think the whole, like, home opener thing kind of gets people going. They're like, yeah, you want to come and support the boys in their first game. And then the dramatics of it. But they didn't win, and I don't know. I think a lot of casual fans are like, well, they didn't win, so they lose. And I don't know. I'm making excuses. People should have showed up. That's all.
Well, the crowd's not the story here. The story is Orlando City losing this game 2-1. Ethan Finley with a brace. He had a goal in the first half in the 12th minute and a goal late in the second half in the 79th minute. That's all that Minnesota really needed. Orlando did get a penalty kick goal from Yoshimaru Yutone late in the first half. That leveled the score, but ultimately at the end of the day, the Lions dropped their first match of the season after a come-from-behind draw last week at home. You know, for all the offseason storylines, the team had the best rebuild in the league, quote-unquote. You know, they were one of the teams to watch. Again, they're without five key starters, but they have 8 of their first 12 games at home, and they've gotten 1 point from their first two. What's your reaction to that?
I think it's still too early to, like, compound your
I agree. It's still too early to start calling for Jason Kreis's head, but
that's even no. I mean, I think it's too early to be upset. Let me rephrase it. It's okay to be upset at a loss like this, but at the same time, it's not the end of the world.
Right.
Right? There's still so much more for this. I mean, you saw it last year. The Lions won the first 6 games and that ended up meaning nothing. They lose the first 2 games, that probably end up meaning nothing. If they continue to lose games, then sure, that's a concern. But 2 games in, when you're still missing your entire strike force, basically, like, they have the biggest thing from this game is that they had no finishing.
Right.
Right.
As soon as 19 shots, what is it, 4 on target? Right. 2 on target.
They have no one.
2 of 19 shots on target.
They have no one to target in the box. Stefano Pena was the guy. And that's why he deservedly earned the spot to start tonight. But when he came out, there was nobody to win headers. There was nobody that was in the box as a target man that any of those crosses could find.
Right.
Right. Chris Mueller did as much as he could, but he is not tall. He is not tall. And if you're trying to cross balls into a guy that's 5'9", 5'8".
And that's where you really miss Dom Dwyer, guy like him, and guy like Kyle Larin.
Even Dom isn't that tall.
No.
But he gets up. Right.
Boxall's got athleticism.
Right. Boxall is listed, what, 6'1", 6'2"? Against a 5'9" guy, he's going to win that every time.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're getting and creating chances on the wings and you're crossing it in, that's great. But if you have no one to get on the end of it, then you're doing absolutely nothing for your team.
Right. I mean, the reactionary way to look at it is DC United is not a very good team, or at least last season they weren't a very good team, and you dropped 2 points to them at home. And Minnesota United is also a team that was not very good last year and lost on the road in San Jose last week. This is a game you should win when they're playing their second consecutive week on the road, flying across the entire country. This is a game you should win. And regardless of who's out, they have the home field advantage. They have the advantage in general because they're the more well-rested side, having been at home all week. However, like you said, it's 2 games. It's the second game of the year. There's 32 more games to play. 5 guys, like we've already mentioned, were out of this game. Sasha Kljestan coming back next week is going to be a huge difference maker against New York City FC, and that just can't be understated. Even if he doesn't have a good game, because it's understandable he's missed last two. He had a whole preseason, but in-game, in a moment like this, is certainly going to be different.
Yeah.
But having him back is going to be huge, especially with Sané's probably going to be more likely to play next week as well.
I'm not sold that Sané's going to immediately play.
At least feature at some point.
At some point, but the way that Amro Tarik has been playing,
right?
Like Jason Kreis has said it multiple times, he's not going to give a guy a starting spot because they're brought in to be a starter. He's going to give a guy a starting spot based on their performances. And honestly, I can't say that Amro Tarik has lost his starting spot. I think he's even gained more ground on having that starting spot from the performance he had today. Sure, he didn't have like an amazing game. Obviously, you let in 2 goals. That's going to go against you for something,
right.
But arguably, I think he, as the two center backs had a better game than Spector did. And I think the speed that Sané has compared to Tarek, I still haven't seen, but, I mean, Tarek is quick.
Yeah.
He's a quick center back.
I think that's the thing for a big guy,
yeah.
too.
Yeah. No, and you can win headers, and he can run down balls, like you saw tonight, right? And I think with the possession that they had, with 58% possession, I think that was that speaks to a lot of what Orlando is capable of doing
right.
in terms of controlling the game. The only thing they lacked was the finishing touch.
Because we saw a lot of games last year where they were on the far side of that possession
right.
total.
And I think that speaks to the progress that
right.
Jason Kreis has made with this
and
team.
So far, they've led possession in both games, I believe, so far this year, convincingly.
Correct.
One thing, you know, you speak of the defense, too. One thing that's going to be interesting next week is not just that center back, but at right back. R.J. Allen has experience on that New York field, and Scott Sutter was not very good tonight. And if you're going to reward guys for who's playing better right now, Scott Sutter didn't earn a start next week.
No.
I wouldn't say he lost it, but when you look at his performance tonight and kind of what the advantages that R.J. Allen has going into that game against New York City,
mm-hmm.
it's going to be something else to watch.
I think it was just tired legs from Sutter. I mean, you
right.
saw it at the end of the last game last week. He was gassed at the end of it.
Yeah.
And I don't know if he's coming back from injury. I know he didn't play the final pregame session against Chicago. It could speak to a number of things, honestly. But I wouldn't say that Sutter's lost his starting spot yet.
Mm-hmm.
I think what Jason will do is, because of the performances that he saw, he'll wait and see what happens this week of practice and give guys opportunities to earn their spots in practice, and they have to take it.
Right.
And if they don't, then, I mean, I see Scott Sutter starting again.
And that's
been his
MO since
right.
the day he arrived here.
Yeah, and again, that goes back to the whole Tarek Sané situation. I think you got to earn your spot. So, at the same time, though, injuries can affect that a lot, because if you don't have Pino, which it doesn't look like they're going to,
right?
He was on crutches, according to Jason Kreis. They don't know the extent of the situation just yet, but
right now it would probably be a day to day, if not questionable, for the next
yeah,
Saturday's
I mean,
game. Flying up to New York,
I would say crutches doesn't necessarily mean he broke his ankle or something like that.
It could just mean a bone bruise.
It's
at the very
precautionary,
most,
if anything. And with the precautionary take, you know, Kevin Molina was on crutches as well. You don't know the extent of his situation. But
his did look a little bit worse, though, because he
mm-hmm.
had to be
I mean, both of them were stretched
physically
off.
Carried off the field.
Both of them were.
Was he?
Yeah, Pino had to be stretchered off. He had his hands all over his face and looked in considerable pain.
Yeah.
So
and the thing about Molina, too, is
that
he went down earlier in the match with
that
same left knee injury.
That was a non-contact.
Or same left leg injury.
Mm-hmm.
That one, a non-contact, is certainly a little bit more serious. And Adrian, he said after the match that it does not look good, and certainly if you're Minnesota United 2 games in the year, that's not a good player to lose.
So let's
But
quickly.
You brought up a good point with that depth, too.
Yeah.
It's worn down. They have nobody else to start at striker next week. If Pino's out, if Dom Dwyer's still out, which it looks, obviously, it's probably well to assume that he's not going to play. You've got Chris Mueller and Justin Merrim starting next week against New York City, so expect that one.
We got some comments here saying Carlos Rivas the GOAT.
Speaking of starters in New York,
yeah,
Carlos Rivas, 2 goals.
I mean,
what the hell?
He also, I mean, he had a Carlos Rivas hat trick. He had 2 goals and a skied free kick into the third row.
Honestly, that is exactly what you can expect as far as an A game for Carlos Rivas. If he only skies one, man of the match material right there.
He has more goals than Orlando City does.
He has as many goals as Orlando
yeah,
City
he does
this season.
Yeah.
Carlos Rivas. In his first start, this was his first game, only because the Red Bulls just played Champions League midweek.
I don't know.
And they didn't have a first team.
I don't know. Maybe they saw something. Maybe because, listen, Carlos Rivas, when he was in Orlando, was good in certain situations, depending on where you put him on the field.
Oh, he's a talented player. There's no
right.
doubt about that.
I
What's
know.
Funny is if you watch, like, watching Twitter during the game and everyone's like, oh, my God, Carlos Rivas is so good. He's so talented.
One game.
Imagine what he can be.
It's
we were doing that was 4 years, in, or 3 years in Orlando that Orlando City fans sat here and said, okay, that's that he sat here and said Carlos Rivas is going to be the next big thing in Major League Soccer.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not convinced that it's going to happen in New York just yet, but it's a good start.
Yeah, it's a change of scenery. It's different positioning, but at the same time, it's only one game.
Yeah.
One game cannot speak to an entire season of how Carlos Rivas will play in New York, and if Orlando City won or lost that deal with Sasa Kljestan, because Kljestan hasn't even played yet. So
right.
way too early to go into that. But we do have other questions coming from
Twitter. We've got plenty of questions. So
we already touched on...
at Orlando Soccer Show, or at Fourth Official Show on Twitter, if you want to get in with this, and AustinDavid22, Gavin Eubank on Twitter. Austin, what do you got first?
So OC Barra says, status on Pino, which we kind of touched on. Options moving forward at the 10 spot, because Larea ain't it. I'll speak to Richie Larea and say that it wasn't a good game from him. I think his first touch let him down more than one occasion, and he didn't pick his head up enough to be that number 10 guy. Right. And Jason Kreis spoke to it after the game, saying how they were trying different things to fill in for not only Sasha Kljestan being out, but Josue Coleman. They're two first-choice number 10s.
Right.
So they were trying things, and it didn't work for today.
And they went with Yoshi Utone last week, and he was okay, but that's not really his natural role with this club, and it did kind of look out of place to what you're normally used to seeing. And the same thing with Richie is it surprised me when I saw the lineup and they had him up at the top of the diamond and Yoshi on the right side, and it's like, well, is that correct? Are we really going to see that?
Mm-hmm.
That's what we saw. You know, he had that one moment late in the game. He gets the ball there, and he just holds on to it. And I think his decision-making, he's not really the quickest player out there, and I think that shows. His passing wasn't bad, though. I mean, if you look at his passing numbers, 90%
from the
match.
Best on the team?
Yeah. Well, for as far as players that played the majority of the match, he had 90%. Only 21 passes.
But that's at the number 10
still.
Role. Only 20 passes with the number 10. Playing in that deep a role, supposedly being the distributor for the offense, you can't have only 20 passes.
Right. And I think
you need to be able to get it off your feet a lot quicker. There were so many times where
Larea, well, we saw with last season, too. Remember, Giles Barnes had a couple games where he only had like 10 touches as the number 10. And
I
he still played a good role.
Mm-hmm.
So
I think it was depending on the way that they structured the offense.
Yeah, that team was definitely built differently than this lineup is.
Yeah, but I think still with Larea, I mean, there were times where you saw when Larea got the ball, defenders were swarming, and he couldn't get it off his feet.
Mm-hmm.
And I think all night when players got balls at their feet, I think they just took either one touch too many or they didn't have an outlet, because Minnesota's game plan was to swarm whoever had the ball. And that really caused Orlando some problems because they weren't able to distribute the way they wanted to. Right? DC United, the way that they played Orlando was the exact opposite of how you should play them. They gave them space, they sunk back, and they defended. Right? Minnesota, credit to their team, they attacked. And they attacked hard. Every time Orlando City had the ball, they attacked, they pushed, they pressed. And that is exactly how they ended up winning this game. Is they pressed, they forced turnovers, and they were able to push on the counter. And the two goals that they had, I think, they were both off of dead balls.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And each time that happened, there was just one quick ball downfield, and it opened up the entire defense.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And that's been a problem for Orlando City teams in the past. Yeah. But at the same time, that was their game plan. They knew how to attack the Orlando defense, and they did it with precision, scoring two goals. And in this atmosphere against this team that still hasn't put things fully together, I think it's, again, too early to be too angry at this team.
Right. It's, you know, when we get out of March, then it's going to be the time to start looking. One more question from Osi Barra. Why no Higuita? I'm honestly convinced that Jason Kreis doesn't know he exists and is still on the roster. Remember when people thought he was leaving this offseason? I'm convinced that Jason thinks he actually left and someone's just writing his name on the sheet because he only put six subs.
So here's the deal with Higuita. When I asked Jason a few weeks ago about his situation because he was kind of training off to the side, Jason, like his mood was kind of like jovial or whatever, and then I asked Higuita and he kind of just went like somber. He's like, you know, I wasn't happy with his fitness level when he came into camp. Mm-hmm. I wasn't happy how he came into camp. And then he also had an injury, which he's working back from.
He did have that preseason injury, which will hamper you. And I think another issue, Cam Lanley was good in that first game.
Right.
And you can't take that away from him when he has a good game. We talk about Jason Kreis rewards good performances. If you have a good game 1 week, the chances are you're going to get the nod the next. Especially if you're already in favor with that coach.
Yeah, I think with Lindley, I think there were times where he looked like a rookie.
This wasn't as good as it was last game, but he did put in a lot of work.
Yeah, I think with Lindley, though, the way he played, there were passes that he was making that nobody at his age should be trying.
Right.
But he was making those passes. Like the switching of field, that opened up the wings. There were times where he'd pick it up at the middle of the field and just spray a ball out wide, and it would fall perfectly for whoever he was targeting. And there were other times where he tried to square a ball across the field, and it'd be intercepted, and it was easily intercepted.
Yeah.
But that's going to come with time. You know, if you don't give the kids the opportunity to prove themselves and to get game time against quality opponents, you're not going to figure out what he can do in the future.
You look at...
And this is the perfect time to play these kids, because the results aren't as meaningful as they are late in the season, right? Early results, they're going to come and go. You're going to get wins, you're going to get draws, and you're going to get losses. And it's with every team, they're trying to figure things out. But I think this is the perfect time for Jason to play his kids, because the stakes are a lot less than they are towards the middle and end of the season. And this way, you have a quality player in Cam Lindley down the stretch, mm-hmm. who's confident, who's playing well. And not only that, but he's an effective starter.
Yeah.
Right. And this is going to just build his confidence from here on in. Not necessarily his confidence because of his
right.
plays, but just getting his confidence personally, knowing that he can play against these kind of opponents.
And you bring up, and I want to bring up New York again. They started a 17-year-old tonight in Ben Mines, scored a goal in his debut. First career game, 17 years old. What were you doing at 17?
I was in high school.
Same.
I was not doing much in high school.
17 is when I was hired as a bagger at Publix and I retired from baseball. So,
all right, we got some more questions here. Yes. Apollo Kid says, why can't Christ put a team together and tactics to beat two clearly lesser opponents at home?
Well, he's missing five key starters, so that's definitely a big factor.
Yeah, and I think the injuries compounded with the suspensions and just the selection of players that he had available, he went with the best lineup that he thought could compete.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, they competed. They didn't perform as well as he probably wanted to, but I think, you have to credit Minnesota for the game plan they had. They shut down Justin Meram. Every time he got the ball, they didn't let him create anything.
And that was a big thing for Orlando, too, is Justin Meram was a lot more quiet in this game than he was last week.
Well, because of the Minnesota defense.
That they and the lack him. Of options that he had up right. there to begin with.
Yeah. And, you know, with Meram playing as the second striker along with Pino and eventually Mueller, oftentimes he was wide. Right, he was the one trying to get out wide to distribute into the box. But when you take him out, who's left in the box? Only Chris Mueller.
Right.
You have no other options to cross into the box. And so many times there were crosses that were just poked out of the way because there was little Mueller sitting there, and that was it.
Right.
So when you have a guy like Meram, who's so dominant on the wing, taking him away from the striker position, which he's supposed to be playing, takes away from the offense. So I think the times that he got wide to try and create took away from the chances to score.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Another question we have from
Alex Barkin. Here, I got it all here.
From Alex, yeah, we want to get to that one. Yeah, where was the movement? Lots of watching and standing.
I kind of agree with that. I think it was...
Definitely noticeable difference between the tonight and the first game last week.
But again, you look at the spacing that Minnesota had.
Right.
Right. They were taking away a lot of the options that Orlando liked to do. Right. Minnesota did their due diligence in scouting this team from the first game. Because the way that the 4-2-3-1 formation that Adrian Heath plays, right, it's oftentimes where you have the two central defensive midfielders, then you have the three midfielders and the striker up top, the one striker. Right? He's the outlet guy. And oftentimes you saw some of the wingers getting forward really quickly, and they have the pace to burn a lot of defenders in this league.
Mm-hmm.
And you saw that tonight where some of the counterattacks that they had, they were able to get downfield fairly easily. But I think just having that two central defensive midfielders really upset the way that Orlando City wanted to play,
right.
Because anytime they wanted to play through the middle, those two central defensive midfielders were stopping that. Anytime they wanted to play wide, the wingers would drop back and play defense. So I think it was just a team effort from Minnesota, and they came out with a game plan that they executed. And I think with Orlando, what they did was, I don't want to say that they tried to force the issue too much, but at the same time, I think they just got a little bit frustrated with some of the stuff that was working one night and not the other. And that's going to come over time.
Right.
They're going to grow. They're going to learn from this and be a better team next time. And that's the hope. Right?
So, let's see, another question. Luis Salguera, why can the coaching staff do to better the team? If we could get another head coach, who would it be and why?
Well, I'll answer that first part. What they need to do is find this witch, or, you know, whoever is putting this curse on Orlando City.
It's the curse of Adrian Heath.
That is consistently injuring their best players. They need to find Jozy Altidore and punish him for making Sasha Kljestan get in an angry altercation with him in the tunnel last year in the Eastern Conference playoffs that has him suspended for these first two games. But no, really, I don't think that there's anything the coaching staff can really realistically do at this moment when you're without so many guys. Like, we're not looking at the complete lineup. We're not looking at half of the complete lineup. They're not without Dom Dwyer, their best striker. They're not without Sasha Kljestan. They're probably arguably their best player on the roster.
Mm-hmm.
Jose Koeman, we haven't seen anything from him yet, and he's supposedly the next big number 10 for this team. So who knows what's going to happen when he gets in the lineup. Rossell, and, you know, Sané adds another dynamic to that back line with the competition now with Tarek and Jonathan Spector.
Tarek.
Mm-hmm. But we're looking at far from a finished product right now. We're not going to see it until at least the end of the month when everybody's back and healthy. No. I don't even want to think about what another head coach, because
too early.
It's too far early. Too early to tell. And we were in this boat last year when everybody wanted Jason Kreis out. You know, who realistically are you going to bring in with everything that Orlando City has done that is going to suddenly just change results?
I think you know who.
Is it?
It's Caleb Porter.
That's true. I was expecting
Brent's
some.
Favorite coach.
Yeah, that is true.
Come on, man.
Sworn enemy to Brent Pekus, who's currently floating around in a hurricane somewhere.
Okay, next question. Luis Hernandez. What's up, Luis?
Friend of the program?
Yeah. It's still too early to say Orlando is in trouble. When would you consider the team in trouble looking at the next four matches? So the next four matches, let's just kind of go through it. It's away at New York City on Saturday the 24th.
Away at New York, then you have the Red Bulls back here.
That's on the 31st.
Portland here, and then Philadelphia on the road. Mm-hmm. As far as that goes, I don't think you start judging this team, and I'm going to keep preaching this until they're healthy, until everybody's back. I don't think you can realistically say that this team is in trouble when they don't have everybody that is here. If those guys come back and the play continues like this and we're getting near the end of April, then I think, yeah, you probably see how to start to look at things and say, maybe we're not going in the right direction. Maybe a drastic overhaul happened this offseason, so realistically, the only thing left to do would be change head coaches. But Jason Kreis has this now in his vision. He has set this up to play his style of football.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you go from there if you start looking at head coaches? I think it's far too early to even start thinking about when this team's in trouble. But if you're going to look at that, you can't realistically think about it until the end of next month. See where they are on the
stage. I think
standards.
I just saw a question that kind of flashed away, but it's something about us narrating the games on TV 27.
Us?
I couldn't read it.
If you guys want to start that petition, honestly, I won't even.
Listen,
upset.
I've been on some games before. I've got experience broadcasting. So.
That's true.
And you do too. You broadcasted one Rollins soccer game. Just one. All right, last question from Nelson L08. In a league where physicality is nearly important as technicality, why are we playing such a narrow formation? Mids are constantly getting drug wide into unnatural positions, and we get beat for pace with minimal creativity. Same old routine, lots of new faces. You want to touch on this one first?
I think as far as the shape that Jason Kreis kind of looks for, this team doesn't have creative wingers to really go outside and do a lot.
And that's how Jason
and that's by design, though. Yeah. And I agree with that. I think it's more to keep the way he plays his diamond. It's not so much offensive minded; it's more defensive minded. And if he keeps the midfield specifically compact and stuck together, then the team, the rest of the team, you know, the players are going to be forced outside to play into Donny Toya and to play into El Muhar and to play into Scott Sutter. They're stronger outside backs. And if you keep teams out of the middle, you're not only you're keeping them out of possession, but mm-hmm. you're forcing them outside, which makes it tougher to score because they're basically limited to crossing chances, which a lot of teams did well to Orlando City last year, and that's where we saw their struggles.
I'll say this about the formation, the diamond formation, right? It's built to play through the midfield.
Right.
And as of right now, Orlando City hasn't been able to do that. And I think that's, again, partly because of the pieces that they're missing, but also the way that teams are scouting them, right? And I'll compare Jason Christ and Adrian Heath here. They both like the systems that they put in place. Mm-hmm. Adrian Heath had a system for years, and I've talked to former players from USL days, and they say, even Jamie Watson on the last podcast, he said, I didn't realize that I didn't think I was playing the correct football until I got into Adrian Heath's system. And that spoke a lot to what Adrian Heath put into place. And I think in year two now with Minnesota, you're going to start seeing more of what he likes in his formation because of so many guys that are returning that have experience in the shape and how they want to play. So I think you'll see a little bit more growth with that team compared to last year.
Right.
And that's something with Adrian, that his system takes time to learn, right?
Same thing with the diamond.
Right, and that's the same thing. Right? Jamie Watson said it took from 2009 in Austin to 2011 in Orlando for them to perfect the system. That's 2 years of getting through tough times. Jamie Watson, he said that the team was terrible in Austin. Mm-hmm. Right? They were getting beat and beat hard. But 2 years down the road when in Orlando, they were the best team every year in USL. Now, that's right. Again, that's USL, but if you can translate with better players to MLS, that's going to get you a lot of wins. So with Jason Christ now, right, his system was proven as well in Real Salt Lake, right, if it's played correctly. And I think because of how many new players are in this team, it's going to take time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing with Adrian Heath's system. When he came in 2015, his system couldn't be perfected because there was so much turnover from 2015 to 2016 and even coming into 2015.
Right.
And that happens.
There was so much. And it's just going to take time, right? You have the pieces available, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's going to click immediately.
And that's one of the reasons why we try to preach patience with Jason Christ, is because he has a system, and it's the best way it's going to work is if every player in that system is not only in a role that they know, but a role that they're comfortable in.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're able to go into work and do a job you know you can handle, and the job that you know you can do better than anybody else, you're going to perform very well in that. And that's what we're seeing with players that they're bringing in, like the Dom Dwyers and the Sasha Kleshins, the Justin Mirams, the Cam Lindleys, the Yoshi Mario Tones, the guys, the Will Johnson specifically too.
Mm.
Guys that can, that are comfortable where they play on the field and doing what the coaching staff is asking them to do. And it's going to, you know, it doesn't just come together in a preseason all the time. We've seen, like, that's the thing with Major League Soccer. It you don't know who the best team is, honestly, in the first 3, 4, 5 months of the year. You don't know who the best team is until you get down to the last 3 months of the season, and the teams really start to separate themselves.
Yeah.
Just because Orlando City is not playing well now doesn't mean that they're not going to make the playoffs in the next 8 months. Anything can happen between here and there. There's still a lot of players they need to get back, and they can lose a lot of players in between there, and there's still a summer window for them to make improvements if they need to.
I don't know if they have enough. Honestly speaking, I don't know if they have enough money to realistically go out and get a game-changing player like that. But time will tell.
After robbing a couple banks.
Yeah. Time will tell with this
really
team.
Could really use that stadium name money, so that's for sure.
All right. Last thing we'll do, because it's almost half an hour. Adrian Heath. There's a fun story about...
Adrian Heath.
So he was wearing a tracksuit tonight, and a lot of people were speculating, like, oh, because it has a huge Minnesota United crest, and he's making a statement or whatever. It's a lot simpler than that.
So the story, as per Jamie Watson,
mm-hmm.
if you were watching his Facebook live stream, or
Periscope.
His Periscope, which we were doing right before we went on the air here. So, funny story, and I noticed this, everybody noticed this, that Adrian Heath was not wearing his typical white button-down, blue, dark blue slack
mm-hmm.
dress pants when he came here. The reason why? Because he forgot his slacks in Minnesota. He didn't pack them.
Oh my God.
His wife, him, I don't know who's in charge of packing his clothes.
He is.
Literally, the one thing that he's had to do for the last 15 years, the last 50 years of his life, pack that white shirt and blue pants, which, honestly, I want to know if he has, like, just one of each and he just gets them dry cleaned every week. Or if he's got, like, 12 pairs of the exact same outfit.
Here's my question.
Either way, he didn't bring it.
Yeah, he still has a house here.
He still... Right. So you imagine there's got to be, like, 50 pairs of that there.
Like, what?
You open up his closet and it's just 18 pairs of that one outfit.
I think what happened was he
got to the stadium and realized he didn't have his pants.
That's where you call mom and say, "Mom, can you bring me my pants?"
I mean, listen, Harrison was here. He wasn't right. playing. He could have run home. It's only a 15-minute right. drive to Winter Park.
Right.
So blame Harrison Heath.
Son, you got to go get my pants for me. Daddy forgot his pants. Oh, boy.
God. Okay, so...
the game was rough, but this has been fun.
Yeah, just forget about all those conspiracy theories about Adrian Heath wearing the crest, and it's like, oh, I'm making a statement. No, he just forgot his pants.
He just forgot his pants. Simple. Who doesn't forget their pants here and there? Who doesn't forget their one pair of pants that they always wear constantly? You got to imagine that's number one on the checklist. Shirt, pants, soccer ball, clipboard. Let's go to the stadium.
In my brain, just popped up the scene from The Incredibles.
Mm-hmm.
Honey, where's my super suit?
Where is my super suit?
Imagine that conversation with his wife or something.
Just digging through the closet, ripping everything out.
Incredibles 2.
I need that movie to come out already.
It's coming out.
They come out June.
All right, we're going to come back in a few days, maybe Monday, maybe Tuesday. We got a special guest coming on the new podcast.
Another special guest.
It is former Orlando City player Dennis Chin. We're going to talk to him, obviously, about all of this, some inchy stuff, and like where he is now, obviously, in Pittsburgh.
Find out where Adrian buys his pants. He might know that.
I'm not going to ask him about where he buys his pants. I'm sure Dennis does not know at all.
You never know. You spend enough time around the game, I'm sure things come up in conversation.
Anyways, if you're watching this live, Adrian, he's buying all night. So if you find him at a bar,
definitely, free drinks. Definitely. Free drinks, if you approach him with a pair of blue slack pants, you're getting free drinks all night. I guarantee you that.
Honestly, though. All right, that's going to be it. It's like 11 o'clock. I'm going to go party.
I got to go home. We lose an hour of sleep tonight.
All right, see you on the other side of Daylight Savings Time. Hope you enjoyed this, and we'll be back in 2 weeks.
Love you guys.